What's up, queens? Welcome to the Female Dating Strategy Podcast, the meanest female-only podcast on the internet. I'm Ro.
I'm Savannah.
And I'm Lilith.
So today we're going to tackle a topic that was much requested after Lilith sent out a tweet. Actually, where's the tweet?
I can't remember what the tweet was, but the tweet was something like, I want to do an episode called Exploiting the Cracks of Male Solidarity.
Hold on. Well, let's find the actual tweet because it's pretty funny. This is so true.
Okay. I found my tweet. On September 7th, I tweeted, I want to do an episode like Exploiting the Cracks in Male Solidarity because male solidarity is really not as strong as Rad Tweet makes it out to be. And I mean, I got a bunch of like private quote tweets that I can't read. Like there's 7 quote tweets on that and none of which I can read. I have no idea what's there.
Probably incels. They block you.
Or femcels.
Yeah, and femcels. Like, I kind of hate that feature of Twitter that people can have you blocked and still retweet you.
Yeah, quote retweet you and stuff. Like, there's a certain segment of Rad Tweet or Rad Fem Twitter that they have me blocked, but they still quote tweet me whenever they see a tweet of mine that they don't like. And that invites all the other, like, Rad Tweet femcels to pile on. And then it's like a whole thing. And then I get like 40, 50 private quote tweets. And I'm like, what the fuck are you guys saying about me? And
so basically this episode is in response to that tweet because there was a lot of people who requested us to talk about how do we exploit cracks in male solidarity.
And I wanted to say the reason why I tweeted that is because I've just been really enjoying the past few months this process of playing two of my male managers like off of each other, you know, because chaos is a ladder and I'm climbing that ladder. And I want more women to understand that, like, yes, like male supremacy is a problem. Yes, like men do have solidarity with each other. And I'll define male solidarity in a moment, but it's not something that's insurmountable. And on an individual level or on an interpersonal level, it is actually very fucking easy to like sow chaos, create division and so on among men, because like they have a sort of natural competitiveness with each other. They have competing interests. And once you identify those competing interests, it's very fucking easy to break that solidarity between them. You know, on Twitter, all I ever see is like doom and gloom shit. Like, women have no solidarity. We're never getting out of the patriarchy. Men's solidarity is way too strong. We're never going to overpass that. And it's like, stop admitting defeat, sis, okay? We are winning. It may not seem like it, but we are on the way to winning, okay? And it's hard. We are facing so many obstacles when it comes to overthrowing male supremacy, but it is not impossible. And we're already in the process of winning. So stay tuned.
Yeah, so pay attention.
Pay attention. Listen up.
Lilith is going to give us all the inside tea about how to be a chaos agent.
Yeah, how to be an agent of chaos and patriarchy.
And dismantle male solidarity.
Exactly. This is actually like a legit war strategy. I had a blog basically where I was talking about feminist realism and applying like principles of realism to feminism. And I kind of have abandoned that for a while. I'm going to probably come back to that. But this is one thing that one area that I'm going to write a proper article about eventually when I get around to it. Anyways, so first let's define male solidarity. Male solidarity is a political strategy in which men work together to advance their shared interests. And generally that is male supremacy and the subjugation of women. And in feminist discourse, especially radical feminist discourse, male solidarity is taken as a given, as something that's just, it simply exists. It's always there. There's nothing we can do about it. You know, this is like a really, really big obstacle for women to overcome, or that it's something that's not possible for women to overcome. But in my personal opinion, you know, as someone who spends a lot of time around men, I've noticed over the years that male solidarity is really not as strong as most people seem to think it is, or at least most women seem to think it is. So I just wanted to share some tips and tricks that I've learned over the years to exploit the cracks in male solidarity, let's just say.
So what are some examples of male solidarity?
Yes, some classic examples of male solidarity would be locker room talk in which boys learn from a young age to degrade women for status. You know, we've all seen that, you know, men saying degrading things about women and especially boys saying degrading things about girls so that they can seem cool or whatever in the eyes of other boys. Another one is men defending other men accused of sexual misconduct. You know, a good example would be, you know, Harvey Weinstein. For a long time, you know, because he was powerful, people around him protected him. It was a sort of open secret in Hollywood that everyone knew, but nobody really dared talk about because he was just that protected for so many years, right?
And even after it came out, it seemed like every loser on Twitter or any social media had an opinion that was somehow,
what he did wasn't that bad. That's just part of the industry, blah, blah, blah. These women are whores. They just wanted to be a star. Yeah.
Exactly. A knee-jerk reaction defending men in these examples. So yeah, that it's kind of interesting to watch men's knee-jerk reaction to defend, honestly, the most reprehensible behavior, because I think on some level they know, they understand the Overton window, that if they just keep defending the indefensible, that they can drag the discourse towards their side and to be more favorable for them.
Well, here's the thing is, even men who are not as powerful as Harvey Weinstein, and I'll talk about this later in the episode, one of the challenges is that lower status men tend to identify with higher status men and idealize them and be sycophantic to them. They aspire to be like them someday, right? And so they have a vested interest in maintaining this power structure, because even if it's a complete and total fantasy and these higher status men see these low status men as like scum on the bottom of their boot, you know, these lower status men want to be like them. So they'll defend that power structure in the hopes that they'll be as powerful and can have those same benefits, you know, even if they'll never be that powerful, right?
My favorite thing is like when men act like they have rich men problems, right?
Yeah. Oh, she's just trying to baby trap me for my money and he's got $10 in his bank account. Yeah,
exactly.
Like, oh, I need to get a prenup, when it's like you have no assets to protect apart from that your PS2 is not an asset that anybody would want anyway.
It's always the guys with the least to lose with the most paranoia.
Do you know what I mean? It's so wild.
Yeah. So that mentality, that is another example of male solidarity as well. Like, you know, poor men assuming that they are like rich men, or, you know, seeing themselves as rich men. But we'll get to that later in the episode. Another example of male solidarity is basically every religion. You know, like every religion teaches women like that you have to be chaste. You have to get a husband. You have to pop out as many babies as possible. You got to serve your husband.
Yeah. And how the most like prominent figures and most quoted voices in all the religions are all men.
Mm-hmm.
Even in the Bible, there were females who said and did very, very good things, but you don't hear anything about them, or they are incorrectly like portrayed as being a prostitute.
Yeah.
As was the case is what happened to Mary Magdalene, who was actually one of Jesus's, you know, really, really good friends. And throughout history, she's just been portrayed as a prostitute, which is historically inaccurate.
Mm-hmm. The final example I wrote down here was the way that police officers have a sort of blue wall of silence in which they don't report on other officers' errors or police brutality or anything like that. And often women who try to join the force, they'll find themselves like getting sexually harassed, and other men, even if they're not sexual harassers themselves, they'll just not say anything and won't be a witness for her on her behalf, for example.
I've worked with the police a lot, and people like male and female officers, they do actually speak up about bad behavior and try to whistleblow. But the problem is, like, the fallout for them, oftentimes the bad behavior, the bullying, the harassment is then directed like towards them. And it's just a really, really toxic culture. And I've come across really young officers who genuinely came in to the police force with really good intentions. But you just see how that culture has basically just worn them down, because it's just so toxic. It's basically so masculine. And even the female officers, that they can actually end up even worse than the men. Like, I've trained police officers in rooms where the female officers are more misogynistic than the male officers.
Mm-hmm.
And you're just like, what the fuck?
That's another crazy thing, actually, about, I wouldn't say it's male,
I think it's male supremacy. I think it's male supremacy, not really solidarity, really, because...
Well, some women will try to increase their own status by participating in a sort of male solidarity. Like, they try to, like, virtue signal about, like, you know, I care about male suicide rates or whatever, you know, to try to seem like, you know, I'm not like other girls. I'm not like those bad feminists. I'm one of the good girls. Like, I believe men, right? And then other men will be like, oh my God, you're so amazing, and give her lots of positive attention and stuff. And so...
In that scenario, though, it's like the men were actually, like... disagreeing with them. So it was about victim blaming, for example, and the women were victim blaming more, and the men were saying that they were wrong. And that was what was really baffling, is that it's almost like they were cheerleading for men, but even the men were saying that what they were saying was inappropriate. And I was a bit like, what are you getting out of this? Do you know what I mean? I mean, if the men were agreeing, I'd be like, fair enough, but even the men thought they were chatting shit.
I think it's a lot of it has to do with the pre-screening tactics to find those types of women in the first place. I don't know how they do it in the UK, but I know that a lot of police forces have like psychological tests and they're like questionnaires, etc. And some of the things, it's almost like they're trying to get you to reveal certain biases before they hire you, right? And like ideally it's being used to like screen out psychopaths or whatever, but it doesn't really. It actually just a lot of times confirms that the candidate has certain biases that would make them fit in on the police force. And I also feel like the type of women who are sometimes attracted to police work specifically are women who have other police officers in their family and or like are a bit male identified to begin with. So then like they're almost pre-indoctrinated before they join the force. At least that's been my experience about the people that I know who are police officers, and then how some of the women got involved, and then why sometimes the women are the most vitriolic. And also, I feel like it's somewhat like naivety, you know, like some women just feel, what's the word I'm looking for? Like sometimes you see women that they have like a hero worship mentality for men. So then like they denigrate women because they feel like men are more likely to be the heroes in the story versus like if they defend women, then if women are like,
women are more likely to be villains.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, I am a villain and I just embrace it completely. And I encourage all women to do so. Embrace your villain side.
I feel like any type of patriarchal institution that you try to adopt in, they brainwash you to only see the heroic things about men and not all the like totally horrific shit, if that makes sense.
Well, the horrific shit, they'll be like, oh, those are just a few bad apples. They refuse to acknowledge that it's like normalized and it's part of the system and everything. But anyways, so on to the cracks. Because we all know that male solidarity is a thing and it is a problem, but let's talk about some of the cracks. The first crack that I noticed was when I was reading Lenny Bancroft's Why Does He Do That? There's a section there where he's talking about how he's working with abusive men and men who tend to be emotionally abusive, for example, they'll look down on the guys who are physically abusive and be like, oh, I wouldn't like kick the shit of my wife. Like, you know, I'm so much better than you because I only emotionally abuse my wife. I don't like, or I only financially abuse her. I don't like physically hit her, that kind of thing, right? So that's one thing to pay attention to, is that men tend to identify more closely with men who abuse similarly to them, and they'll not identify with men who abuse differently. So the solution is to basically just like pay attention to who are the men in this situation, who are they defending and why? If they're disagreeing with the men and being like, oh, you know, you did something wrong or something, like ask yourself why kind of thing. Don't necessarily act on it right away, but just like notice these kinds of alliances and discrepancies. And, you know, in the moment, you might not be able to do anything about it. But as time goes on and you can observe some of their weaknesses, you know, you have to wait for the right time to act, right? Do you guys have anything else to add?
So what would be the right time to act? Like, how do we know when to pounce?
Yeah, when to pounce. So I would say one thing that I've done is putting men on the defensive. So if a man starts defending another man for, say, like sexual assault or sexual harassment, I would immediately say something that puts him on the defensive. You need to make these kinds of alliances costly to men. And if a man is defending another man of, say, like, you know, done sexual harassment, you need to sort of like taint his reputation, so to speak. Like the fact that he's defending that guy, you need to find a way to make him look bad. And you might not be able to do it again in the situation when he starts defending him. You could say something like, oh, he's been like accused of sexual harassment. Like, why would you defend someone who's done that? Then that puts him on the back foot and he has to defend himself. You might have to wait until a bit later. You know, you got to read the room, right? And so sometimes that would be a time to maybe, you know, start asking around, asking the other women like, oh, like, has this guy done this kind of thing? Basically, like when a man defends another man who's done something heinous, that should reflect badly on him. And you should use that as an opportunity to taint his reputation, like preemptively, so that if in the future he does something like that, he already has a reputation of being a creep or something. Basically, use that as an opportunity to poison the well against him, is what I'm saying. Does that make sense?
Say something so cutting that it makes them shut the fuck up, right? Unless they're like the type that's really, really belligerent and going to sit around and argue with you, because those are those guys too that are really explosive. And this actually happened at a job I had after the whole Aziz Ansari situation, when like some guys were trying to defend that as a bad date. And I basically called him a creepy little Muppet.
I thought that was a British term, Muppet.
A Muppet?
Yeah, you Muppet. Yeah. That's like a British insult.
Henson Muppet. But yeah, I basically like somewhat made the conversation uncomfortable because I started like saying how completely repulsive and gross Aziz Ansari was. And so then I think in some respects, like if you make the man seem sexually repulsive too, then men don't want to be associated with also being sexually repulsive. So that's a way to do it. The times I've tried to make a more complex argument about sexual assault always seems to backfire, because then men get like really invested in like arguing with me. You know, I can hold my own, don't get me wrong, but it ends up just like fucking up my mood, if that makes sense. And so it ends up not being worth it, because I think I don't change their mind that much. Some of the women get uncomfortable And then it just like kind of fucks up my mood for the rest of the day. So my particular strategy when something like that's happened is like legitimately make them seem so sexually undesirable, or like whatever's happening, make it seem so sexually undesirable that a man would feel embarrassed to be associated with that kind of incel them. And or just completely remove yourself from the situation and like, I mean, literally walk off in a huff, like express your displeasure, but don't necessarily engage in long-term arguments. At least that's been my strategy.
I would agree with that. And I would say like, I totally understand like the freeze response, because honestly, yeah, in the moment, it is really hard to, you know, not everyone can come up with like something witty. And even I, you know, draw blank sometimes. And even if you come up with something, a witty, like cutting remark, sometimes like you're in a group setting and, you know, if it's mostly men, they're more likely to side with the guy. Again, you got to read the room. Like sometimes if you're in a social setting where like, say it's mostly women, you know, and I know these women and I know they're based and I know they're the type of woman, there are certain situations where I'm with women and I know that they're the type of women who would defend me if I was like arguing with a man, then, you know, just be like, yeah, you know, I have the same thing with what Lilith is saying kind of thing, you know, and like, I'll say the audacity thing first and then they all kind of join in, right? So if you got to like evaluate the situation, like, is it safe for me to call him out? First of all, like physically safe. Secondly, is it like politically safe to call him out? You know, so you kind of have to weigh those things.
I feel like roasting the guy sexually signals that like this behavior is undesirable, and that them defending it makes them undesirable by...
And humor is a great strategy.
Yeah, exactly. Makes them undesirable by association. So if they start saying like, oh, Harvey Weinstein didn't do anything for those, you know, like those girls wanted to be with Harvey Weinstein. And I'm like, yeah, I guess a guy shaped like a sack of potatoes with a rotting dick. Yeah, who wouldn't want to have to fuck some guy like that to get a job, right? Or something like that, that makes it seem like it's actually ridiculous and repulsive for you to be defending someone so sexually repulsive to women.
And that's actually like using humor, like cutting humor like that is a great strategy, because, you know, if you were to just like be totally aggro without any humor, like it could make other people uncomfortable kind of thing, right? But if you say something mean, but in a funny way, and the people around you laugh, and it kind of puts everyone at ease, it makes it like the tension, like it makes it easier to win people over and get buy-in, like for you kind of thing, right?
That's why I think learning how to physically roast men is actually a skill you need to be a feminist.
Yeah, like knowing how to mock men is a very valuable skill.
It's highly effective in shutting down conversations.
And men do it with each other all the time. That's another crack I'm going to get to later. But like, men are so fucking mean to each other and they bully each other all the time. You know, you can participate in that. You got to be careful. It's risky, but it can be done if you know the dynamic, right? But we'll get there. So my next crack that I've noticed is the dynamic between high productivity or high status males and lower status males. Now, this is a complicated one, because highly productive men or like higher status men, they tend to like look down on, like, I'll tell you an example, actually. So I was talking with my boss. My immediate supervisor is like a total girl dad. He's like, he's a good dude, actually. Like he's got two daughters. You know, he is like against misogyny. He doesn't always like get it. Like he doesn't always like know what's going on, but he's like supportive of me, right? Which I do appreciate. And so, you know, he talks all the time about like all the fucking morons that we work with, and all of the fucking morons are men, right? And he has this sort of thing where, you know, in his career, he's been very like hardworking, you know, highly productive. And he just like, the men that are not on his level, he just sort of looks down on them and feels okay with exploiting them, you know, financially in like a workplace environment, you know? Like, there have been times where, like, oh, I'll complain about a guy I'm working with, and he'll be like, yeah, but have you ever thought that maybe he's just too fucking stupid, or that you're, like, he's just not as smart as you? Like, did you think about that? You know? Like, maybe he's just not smart enough to have a better job than this, and that's why he's still here. Just say shit. Like,
you know, I have noticed high-value men are very disdainful of low-productivity, like, low-status men. That is very true. So sometimes if you find a guy who's, like, a hardworking guy, especially if he's, like, a definitely, like, a pull-himself-up-by-a-bootstraps guy, they're often the most disdainful of scrody men, because they realize, like, they could be better but choose not to. And or they are so fucking stupid that it's beneath their dignity to entertain any of their ideas.
Well, they all know the feeling of like being on a team where they're putting in a lot of work and getting the good results, and then the other guys on the team are just coasting.
Yeah.
Right? Like, guys, you know, it's complicated, and like male friendship or male group dynamics are complicated. Even I don't fully understand them yet. But like, you know, we all know the pain of like being on a team and you're the highest performer and you're doing a good job and you're just surrounded by mediocrity, and you're like, damn, like, you know, before he became a manager and he was just like salesperson and stuff.
Like, they're dumb out here, son.
Yeah, he just has this feeling of like, I'm so much better than all these other guys. These other guys are fucking stupid. And that's why I'm their boss and they're my employee now, kind of thing. You know, so if you can find a way to, like, you know, get on the good side of men like that and like kind of feed them ideas, sort of like learn to manage up in a way, get a receptive ear from men like that, that's really, really advantageous. And that's one way that you can, like, you know, access some, you know, benefits of that power structure, so to speak.
I have to say, all of the extremely high value men I know are men who came from really terrible backgrounds and legitimately, like, were self-made, and their disdain for the people that they grew up around in some respects is like, they understand from a larger social dynamic that sometimes, like, people are influenced certain ways. But on the other hand, they don't make a lot of excuses for men who don't also take the available opportunities and pass available to them.
Yeah, like, I did, why can't you, kind of thing.
They tend to believe in meritocracies a lot more, meaning like they don't have bleeding hearts. It doesn't mean like they're necessarily politically conservative, but they're not like the type of guys that are necessarily overly empathetic, which can be a double-edged sword. But at the same time, like, they're definitely your best allies when it comes to like shitting on like terrible men in society, because they don't have any sympathy for them either. And therefore, like, if you complain about them, they're like, yeah, they don't feel solidarity with losers and creeps.
Exactly. They don't feel solidarity with losers and creeps. They might not, like, out the gates, like, fire the guy or something like that, right? So don't expect, like, to walk into your boss's office, be like, this guy was sexually harassing me. Like, he's not gonna, you know, immediately fire him without, like, maybe, you know, asking some questions or whatever, right? But if you can, like, be like, oh, you know, I'm going through this thing, and, like, you show that you're the sort of person to rise above, they'll respect you more, and then they'll see that guy, they'll trust him a little bit less. Again, it's about poisoning the well and damaging the shitty guy's reputation, right? You know, the benefits of that are innumerable, right? He can get passed up for promotions. You know, he might just get like fewer opportunities. He might end up like just getting fired.
Because no business owner who's not a moron wants a creepy man in charge of a team such that it makes it so uncomfortable that the women can't be productive. Right? Like, that's just bad management 101. Anybody who's like somewhat worth their salt should have some kind of understanding that hiring creeps on your workforce and making women uncomfortable in the workforce only hurts your bottom line. So like, you basically have to be a raging misogynist and not care about making profit to allow that to go on. Any man who's in management who's worth his salt is going to have some kind of clue about that and try to nip that in the bud.
The other thing I noticed, if a guy who's sexually harassing me, but he's like the best salesperson on the team, the chances of him getting fired or getting punished at all are much lower, right? But if a guy, let's say like he has a reputation for being a guy who sexually harasses women, but he's a lower performer, it makes it much, much easier to fire him if he's got both things working against him in terms of his reputation and his performance. If it's just one, but not the other, it's a lot harder to actually do anything. But if you can set that stage that like, oh, he's a creep, you know, he harasses the other women, he makes other women uncomfortable, and he has that kind of reputation. If he has a low month, 1 month, boom, gone. Like, oh, he's the bottom 20% of our team. Okay, it's much easier to get rid of him at that point. That's what I mean about, you got to do like the work before doing the work. And a lot of women, maybe you're listening to this and you're like, that sounds fucking exhausting. I don't want to do any of that shit. That's a lot of emotional labor. Honestly, fair. I hear you. And if this sounds like too much work for you, then don't work in a male-dominated industry. I'm just saying, like, these are the survival strategies that I've learned over the years. And if you want to learn them, you know, I'm happy to help, kind of thing, right? Anyways, what's the next one? Okay, so lower status men can resent higher status men, but they're generally too weak and sycophantic, and they take out their anger on women instead. And that's the problem. Like, I find, like, appealing to, like, lower status men who lose out from patriarchy is a losing strategy. Like, the whole, like, patriarchy hurts men too, blah, blah, blah. It's like, I don't give a fuck. Let it hurt them. I don't care.
Yeah, they like it that way.
That's the thing. Like, you know, a lot of people might get mad at me for saying like, no, you got to get in with like the higher status men. You got to like manipulate that power structure to your advantage, kind of thing. Like, for example, a lot of lower status men who are misogynistic often become communists. I will dunk on communist men until the day I die, because like a lot of communist men, they're just the same shitty guy as the rich men, but they're too lazy and stupid to like earn money. Basically, like, the thing I've noticed about like left-wing men is that they're just not smart enough to succeed under capitalism a lot of the time, but that doesn't make them like a friend to the poor or friend to women. Like, as soon as they get a bit of money, they'll become conservative, kind of thing, right? they're just mad losers. They're just bad losers, right? And so that's why I think, like, for women, I would strongly advise against organizing politically with communist men. I just think that a lot of communist men have this, like, whole fantasy, like, oh, once we overthrow, like, capitalism, and it's going to be a free fuck fest, like, I don't have to spend money on a woman to stick my dick in her, kind of thing, right? Men's politics are a function of, like, their sexual interests, right? So, like, higher status men or men who have money, they become conservatives because they can actually afford to, like, have women as private property. Whereas men who are, like, poor and low status, they want, like, the... they want women to be, like, you know, communal property, right? And more easy to access.
But also there's poor conservative men that want... they'll attack feminists or whatever because they're losers in the economy too, and saying that, like, feminists have taken over the man's role. And what they mean by that is, like, I can't get a job because I'm too stupid and lazy, and, like, women are taking it from me. I feel like your statement before is correct. Like, whenever every man's politics is a reflection of his relationship with women on some level and how he views women as a resource. So yeah, the very, like, communist guys feel like people, things should be handed to them, and that they're not able to compete effectively in the market, and that women are some kind of distributable resource. And then, like, the very conservative guys are just as big as losers, but they feel like it's because of, like, the feminists, and that the feminists are denying them their rightful place as the headship of their home as a man.
Exactly, right? My point being, like, if you're looking to exploit cracks in male solidarity, especially the crack of, like, high status men versus low status men, I think attempting to mobilize low status men is generally a losing strategy. There's some women who do it well, like if they're, like, I don't know, like Shoe on Head, for example. Like, there's some women online who make money from basically, like, financially exploiting incels, like women of OnlyFans, for example. Same thing, right? There's a small number of women who can do it somewhat successfully for her on, like, an individual level. But, like, for me personally, like, you know, when I was younger and more left wing, I mean, I'm still, like, a democratic socialist, but when I was younger and more, you know, going through my communist phase or whatever, like, trying to, like, find solidarity with working class men and all that stuff, like, those men, like, the second they get a chance, they will for sure fucking try to rape you. I'm not kidding. And not to say that the high status men won't, but, like, you know, don't think that just because they're disenfranchised by patriarchy, disenfranchised by capitalism, that they're on your side, because they're not.
They're ultimately self-interested, and I think that's the thing women have to be aware of whenever they're fighting for any type of political interest. You'll end up with egg on your face, very similar to a lot of the women that joined a lot of these, like, reclaim masculinity groups, and then turns out they're, like, massively misogynist. You remember when there was, like, all of these leopards ate my face memes about women who joined right-wing groups, or, like, were supporting, like, the Proud Boys or whatever, and then found out they were crazy misogynists once they achieved, like, certain ends, and that essentially that they were fighting for their own personal rights at the expense of women. To be honest, I feel like that's pretty much true across the board in various levels of degrees, that men are ultimately self-interested. So even if they're, like, left-wing and they say, you know, this is all about, like, the common man, like, finally having more influence on society and, like, unionization, etc., don't think that they won't be also trying to figure out ways to prioritize themselves within that type of hierarchy. So I think you just always have to be aware of that. Like, look at it, look at the angle, and then try to figure out, to what extent is there an intersectional mutual benefit to being aligned with these kinds of men? And, like, where are they going to try to take the advantage? Because they always, always, always will try to find a place to personally take the advantage, or the advantage for men in general.
Exactly. Yeah. And so my next sort of crack that I've noticed is that men who spend a lot of time in macho, male-dominated environments, like sales is one, I guess there's, like, construction and probably other male-dominated environments, where the men sort of, like, abuse each other for status. And so that becomes sort of normal to them. And they're still starved for female attention, right? They don't know how to talk to women in a way that won't alienate the women, and that makes them even more lonely. And so, you know, again, like, the whole patriarchy hurts men too, blah, blah, blah. It's like, again, let it hurt them. Like, I don't know why there's so many liberal feminists who are like, oh my God, patriarchy hurts men too. We need to save men from the consequences of their own actions, kind of thing. No, stop that. Like, you know, male solidarity, like, when men are together, do you have examples of these, Ro, where, like, they come up with, like, nicknames for guys based on, like, some flaw? Like, he has, like, a, I don't know, a limp, and they call him, oh, he's the cripple or something, right? They just, like, they're so mean to each other, right?
So, okay, so men tend to build group solidarity by, I don't want to call it, like, disarming their opponent.
Sort of pecking order?
I don't necessarily know that it's, like, always strictly hierarchical, but men tend to be able to be more directly aggressive with men when they have a disagreement. Like, infamously, like, women are a little bit more passive aggressive in our friendships when we have like issues with each other, or when we're trying to kind of figure out if there is going to be a pecking order, like how it works, or like in what circumstances. Men are a little bit more directly aggressive. And I've seen this especially like if they're in the moment and one of them's feeling a little embarrassed, sometimes the other one will just straight up like undercut the other one. But it's not unusual to see men like spar with each other publicly. Usually the things that they will say about a guy is like something they know that man is insecure about, unless they're just like all dogpiling on a guy because they're bullying him. But in some respects, I wonder if it's just like a way for them to toughen each other up.
I don't think that that's what happens most of the time. A lot of these guys, like a lot of my male coworkers, just straight up have like, they're alcoholics. Like, just, like the macho environment definitely takes a toll on them. And I can definitely see it. You know, they go home, drink themselves to sleep every night, yell at their wife, you know, just generally are not living their best life. And they don't think to like take themselves out of the environment that's causing them stress. They just sort of like come up with unhealthy coping mechanisms, but that ends up being their own downfall. So my point here is like, you know, male dominated macho environments often are toxic to the men who participate in it, even the guys that are on top, right? It's just like stressful to constantly feel like, you know, on your guard. Like even the guy who's, you know, at the top of the hierarchy knows he could like lose that at any time. You know, he's having to constantly like defend his position in the male hierarchy or whatever. They may not admit it, but it does stress them out. And I definitely see it. And they just, you know, and they end up divorced, miserable, you know, by the time they're middle-aged, and again, just let them suffer.
I think, yeah, as they get older, I feel like sometimes that stuff gets more vicious because it gets more personal. And then also, however that man personally feels about his achievements in life, it can start to trigger them a lot more. For some reason, I was thinking of like much younger men, but like if they're over, honestly, like they're out of college at all, and they're doing this kind of macho behavior, it becomes a little bit more personal, because then like a man, this is where you start to see men, yeah, start to withdraw if they have not achieved a position in the group that is somewhat respectable, right? Or if they don't feel like they're achieving respect of their fellow men, it can start to be less funny and like more personal.
Or a lot of them just end up becoming extremely unhappy by the time they're middle-aged. Like they're just jaded, they're just bitter, angry all the time, and they just think, oh, that's just being a man or whatever, right? But they're suffering, you know? And it's like, again, just let them suffer. Like, my point being is, ladies, like, you don't have to do anything at this point. Like, there are some situations where you actually don't have to do anything or take action at all, because their own macho-ness will be their own downfall, right? We often talk about male solidarity as something that strengthens men, but over time, I find for the most part, actually, it causes them on an individual level a lot more harm than good. You know, the men who are the happiest tend to be like married and have a wife and kids and stuff. You know, you have to have like good communication skills to keep a woman happy so that she wants to continue to be your wife, or to even get a ring on her finger. You know, there's some men who like abuse their wives and so on, right? You know, a lot of the times those women leave. I hope they leave. You know, that's what we need to really focus on, is supporting women leaving abusive husbands and so on, right? But for the most part, men who are like happily married are the ones who, you know, benefit the most. Again, these men who focus on achieving status within the male hierarchy become emotionally stunted a lot of the time. And they just live their whole lives, you know, trying to make money, trying to do this and this, trying to be the man that other men look up to, not really thinking about the fact that even if they achieve that, they become the sort of man that other, you know, most women, you know, non-gold diggers anyways, right?
Don't find attractive.
You know, most women don't find that attractive. And then they're losing in the end because they can't make a woman happy. They can't get a wife who would make him happy, kind of thing, right?
It's hard to tell in this, like, what's the issue, or like, what's the catalyst for the rest of that? Because are they just undesirable for women? So like, if they're undesirable to women in general, then they will have no influence in the male hierarchy. Like, no man respects a man who can't get pussy. That is like a consistent way that men evaluate each other and their position in the hierarchy.
Oh, he can't get bitches. Yeah.
Yeah. If you can't get women, then, and if you creep out women, they don't want to hang out with you. They'll roast you. You're basically kind of a social outcast, because no guy wants to take his friend out, and his friend is so creepy to women that
he can't be a good wingman. Yeah.
Right. They can't even be a woman. Like, that can be extended to like, they can't get a wife because they're so basically losers. Right. So like, I feel like a lot of men will have like a charity case friend like that, who they like sometimes try to help out, but like who they ultimately don't respect, and then eventually will jettison if they become too much of a liability, right? Especially if, to their own family. If they're getting women and like the women are like, if you bring your creepy ass friend here, I'm not hanging out. Like if they have a girlfriend or a wife and they don't want that man around, then a lot of times these men start to get pushed out.
I want to point out that all of the men at my company who are like CEOs, you know, high level managers, directors, and so on, pretty much every single one of them are married with kids, like almost universally. They're not always necessarily good husbands. They're not always necessarily good fathers, but they have a wife and kids, right? They had to do something to like get a woman to be attracted to him, marry him, and stay with him for 20 years, right? He has to have that sort of like mental capacity to make a woman happy, at least somewhat, at least in the beginning, right? The men who are the most miserable, the most made fun of, and passed up for promotions tend to be the men who, you know, are middle-aged and have never been married or they're divorced. You know, marriage increases a man's status, inability to get any women decreases a man's status. And so leveraging that, like the fact that men's status in the male hierarchy is based on like their proximity to women, as women, we need to leverage that. So like, don't give these shitty men access to you at all. Like, that's actually the number one thing is like, if you want to really like damage a guy or hurt a guy, like just ignore him completely, especially if he's like hitting on you or whatever, just kind of like turn away. And then like other men will see that and like make fun of him, like, aha, like, you know, you can't get any bitches kind of thing, right? Does that make sense?
Yeah, that like that can't get any bitches energy, you can tell both personally and professionally. Because yes, guys who are also like that, unless they have like a buddy or they're just like kind of workhorses that are underpaid, they tend not to be put into management positions because they don't have people skills. Because like being able to get women is a people skill, right?
Yeah.
So you have to have that kind of people skill. You know, marriage, I think, helps men because you end up with long-term people skills or long-term interpersonal skills.
Someone to interact with.
Exactly. So like if you have a wife, more than likely, your interpersonal skills are going to be constantly tested and challenged. And if she's doing her job anyways, tested and challenged.
Yeah. If she's doing her job, she should challenge you. Yeah.
If she's doing her job, the man's interpersonal skills should be constantly tested, challenged, and like
improved, hopefully.
Yeah, improved because of the fact that you're teaching him how to interact with people in a positive way and also how to influence people, right? So I feel like at the very least, if you can't get one woman to buy into you, like how can you get a whole company to buy into you, right? So like that's the mentality of why like marriage just in general helps men and the perception of men. Like first of all, women are already more likely to trust men who have other women that vouch for them, right? Instead of like a lone male. But also men are, because like quite frankly, it shows that you can at least on the very small level, like lead a little family, right? Like lead people to want to listen to you. So then it makes it look like, okay, if you can't influence one woman to believe in you, like how can you get an entire department to believe in you, right? That's really what it comes down to, is like the ability to influence people in such a way that they want to follow you and trust you and the decisions that you make. If you can't get a wife to do that, then there's no way you can get a whole company to do that, right? And so like I think marriage is one step in men creating a sphere of influence in order to get other people to understand and want to buy into them. Now, not totally, like sometimes you have these like maverick entrepreneurs who like get by on like prestige, etc. But even then, it's like interpersonal skills are so important. Like if you can't like pitch to investors, if you can't talk to other people on your team and like get them to buy into your vision, etc., like it gets really, really difficult. So, but then again, most of the even if they don't start out married, they usually eventually get married, because it's like those kinds of things become really, really important as far as like optics.
There's one exception I wanted to say. There's this one guy at my work. He's always been a salesperson. He's never had a management role to my knowledge. He's never been married, never had kids. He's one of these guys, he's like very grouchy with the other guys, but everyone kind of likes him anyways. I don't know. I'm going to call him Joe. That's not his real name, but let's call him Joe. But all of the women in the office actually love him. At first, I thought like that I wouldn't like him because he seems really grouchy. But the more I like interact with him, the more I realize that he's one of these guys where like he's so grouchy with the other men just to like as a survival mechanism, as a coping mechanism or whatever. But he treats the women like royalty.
Oh, is he like a male pick me?
No, not like a male pick me, but like the kind of guy where like if you need help with something, like he might be a little bit like gruff kind of thing, but like he'll actually take the time out of the day to like help you, right? He's a little bit like rough around the edges kind of guy, but like his actions show that he has good intentions. You know, when I first got there, I was like, why does he have this like harem of women and all the women here like love him when he's so grouchy? And like the more I work with him, the more I realize like, oh, okay. He's like a mask that he has with men. And then he can sort of like, I don't know, he shows his like more vulnerable side, or more like, I feel like if he were to be like nice and helpful to the other men, they'd call him a simp, or like they'd like shit on him, right? He only reserves the good treatment for women because only the women like appreciate that and don't abuse him for it.
Interesting. So like, is he able to still exert power?
Yeah. He's one of these guys where like he's been there like 20, 30 years and he's close to retirement. Again, he doesn't have like an official title, but he has like a sort of quiet power that like if people need help, like he's the subject matter expert on like a lot of things, right? So you want to be on his good side. That's another tip actually, is like take your time when you're entering a new workplace or a new social situation, like sort of keep your mouth shut as long as you can. Don't alienate people. Just sort of observe and like learn the dynamics and stuff, you know, ask questions. Talk to other people, like their opinion about things, and then they'll usually blab, right? But like this guy, Joe, yeah, he does have a sort of like quiet power, but he has a sort of soft power. I don't know how to say it. It's not like a hard power. It's not like a violence or even like a title, but he is someone that, you know, people tend to trust, but he's not as nice with the men. Like he's the way that he treats men, like, I don't know, but they're all kind of scared of him. So it's a very confusing person altogether. I'm still in the process of getting to know him, actually.
We have to dissect this like anomaly in the Matrix. Like he's a bit weird,
right? That's the thing. I'm like, he's never been married, never had kids. Like, but why do all the women like him? Like, so he's the one exception to my rule that I'm kind of like, I'm trying to figure him out. You know what I mean? Like, why does everyone respect him even though he's like kind of an asshole, but only to the men, right? Again, that's like maybe a word of advice is like only be nice to women, but be on your guard around men. That's the advice I'd give to everybody, actually, is like just in general, like both personally and politically is advantageous. You know, put men on the defensive. Don't be quick to trust them. Doubt what they say. If they say something, be like, are you sure about that? You know, try to taint their word, basically. But with women, I find it pays off a lot more to get on their good side, stay on their good side. But that's just me. The other thing is when you're observing interpersonal dynamics, don't assume that just because a man is friendly to another man, that means they're friends. Like men can also be two-faced. I know it's a stereotype, like women are like two-faced. They'll be nice to your face and like mean behind your back, but men do this too. I've noticed this a lot where like guys will be friendly, you know, shake hands, bro it out. But then when you're talking to them in private, it's like they've been holding it in and they're just like dying to tell someone like that this other guy's a piece of shit. So if you just keep your mouth shut and ask questions, you know, the control of information is another very important form of power. I want to do another episode on controlling information. Like if you learn, for example, an embarrassing piece of information about someone, you know, you might not want to share it right away. You have to wait for the right time. You know, the ability to like get information, withhold information in certain situations, release certain information in other situations when it's beneficial to you. Yeah. So like when you're talking to men in private, pay close attention to the snide comments and make a mental note for later. Don't participate in it. That's another thing. Do not make the mistake. If a guy's talking shit about another guy, do not make the mistake of like participating. Just be like, make a sort of like, oh, that sounds hard. Like, oh, you know, that's terrible. Or like, oh, tell me more. Like, you know, say something kind of sympathetic, maybe like you're listening to him, get him to lower his guard and trust you more, but don't like, oh yeah, I had this problem with him too, blah, 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 blah. Like, don't share your personal experience with that guy, because that guy, he's being two-faced to the other guy. He could be two-faced to you. He could go and say that to the other guy, right? So don't trust men is what I'm saying, but listen to what they say. Make a mental note for later. Oh, and the other thing is only give men positive attention when they do your bidding. Like, ignore them the rest of the time because anger is still attention to them. But like, if you only positively reward them when they do what you want, it makes them more like eager to please. But again, like if you get a reputation for being like easily triggered or like, oh, you know, getting pissed off easily or whatever, they'll just try to like get under your skin and try to provoke you even more. So like learn to control your emotions, learn to control your knee-jerk emotional reactions. And it can be hard and it takes a lot of time and practice. But like just because a guy says a shitty sexist comment in the moment, like it doesn't make you a bad feminist if you don't immediately call him out for it, is what I'm saying.
So some of it is like, if you remain calm in the face of their needling, then they end up looking a dick, first of all. And then secondly, if they can't get a reaction out of you, then a lot of times they'll get bored and move on. Men feed on attention currency, I think is what you're trying to say. Like, if there's nothing else that women learn from this podcast, attention is currency for men, positive or negative. Female attention, the ability to get attention from women, positive or negative, is currency for a lot of men. So when you're dealing with men, anything, any type of like emotional reaction they're having towards you, if they're gossiping because they're upset about something, if they're just being a dick, trying to needle people, trying to needle you, the best thing you do is like reserve and conserve your attention for when it benefits you, like to give it to them, right? Like you have to basically make them work for it. You have to make them value your attention by only bestowing it on them when it's important for you, like when it's going to be advantageous to you. And I feel like the more you practice that, it can only benefit you in general, like in work, in life, and in relationships, that your attention is only given when it's either mutually beneficial for you to engage with them or they're doing something that you like, right? So I think, yeah, being able to control your emotions is a big part of that. It's very difficult, especially if someone's being an asshole. I think it takes a certain level of maturity over time to like build. You basically have to build willpower and resistance about how to maintain your composure and maintain your mental space among like when it's being attacked, right? And that's kind of the unfortunate reality of being a woman in any type of environment that has men in it, is that like you have to build your will and resistance against their stupidity. And it's harder and harder, like, and a lot of times, like, because women tend to internalize things, it's like, you know, you end up like being put in a position where sometimes it feels like you're silently suffering. But if you kind of devalue men in your mind, you start to learn how to maintain your composure and your dignity and like not let any of their bullshit affect you, and then make moves to strategically benefit yourself.
Exactly. And then the other thing is like controlling your emotions is like your verbal like reactions is important, but also learn to control even just your facial expressions, right? Like men are very, very sensitive to women's facial expressions. I find men, I don't know if other women can relate, but I find often when I'm working with men, they are sort of like, they want my approval. Like, understand that most men are starved of positive female attention and are desperate for female validation. And if you can like withhold that and essentially put like a valve on that and work that to your benefit, you're golden. And so there are some times where it's good to have a poker face. Like, you don't want to reveal how you're feeling about a certain situation, because, you know, if people know how you feel about something, they could use that against you or something. So sometimes poker face is important. Other times, like, this is another reason why I like to like befriend all the women in my office, is that the following scenario has happened so many times where I'm like sitting in my lunch break talking to another woman in my office, and then a guy like that we work with, you know, comes over to like ask us a question or talk to us. He says something like stupid or that I don't like, and I won't even say anything at all. I just do this sort of face that's like, I don't know how to describe the face. I'm sad that I don't have video right now, because I wouldn't dox myself, but I want people to know this face that I do sometimes, where I sort of like almost like hide my lips. You know that like that face where, you know, the face when you like greet someone, you just like kind of like hide your lips. I don't know how to describe that facial expression.
Like you suck your teeth, like you like put your lips around your teeth.
Yeah, exactly. Like, it's not a smile or a frown or anything like that. You just like, it's like a neutral expression, but you just hide your lips. And then I'll like look at the woman next to me and I won't even say anything at all. But like, we kind of exchange like these knowing glances. And then the guy just kind of, I don't even have to say anything at all, but the guy just acts totally deflated. Like, he just immediately is like, oh fuck, I fucked up. Like, I don't even have to say anything. And that's the other thing, actually, is like, if you want guys to, I don't know, be desperate for your approval, is like getting them to sort of like doubt themselves a little bit with those sorts of moments where, you know, if they're being stupid in front of you and there's another woman sitting next to you and you can both like kind of look at each other like, look at this guy kind of thing, right? They'll immediately be like, oh fuck, did I say something wrong? And kind of like doubt themselves and go on the defensive a little bit. It's kind of mean, but I mean, it works. And then puts him in a sort of defensive position where he's trying to like backpedal and trying to like, you know, win your approval back, so to speak, right? It sounds really fucked up when I say it out loud. I feel like working with men has turned me into a very like manipulative person, honestly. But I mean, learning how to navigate these sorts of situations, I don't think is a bad thing. I think it's just another skill, right?
Yeah, it's hard because honestly, like, I feel like the older I get, the less energy I have to just directly confront men on a lot of bullshit. And like, there's just times where I feel like it'd just be so much easier if I could just punch you in the face and be done with it. But since we don't have like, since we don't have their physical strength advantage, we have to come up with other strategies to basically deal with their bullshit while maintaining our composure, because we can't fight them. Like, there's times where it'd just be easy to fight. You're trying to navigate a world in which you are trying to cohabitate with someone who's bigger and stronger than you. It's like being next to a tiger, right? Like a well-trained tiger, but it's still a tiger, right? Like, you kind of have to like, you can't like come at it in an aggressive way. Like, you kind of have to constantly like manipulate it to do the thing you want because it's bigger and stronger than you and can snap at any time. So I just more like look at it like when you're interacting with men, you more or less have to find a way to interact with them that benefits you, incentivizes them to do the things that you want. And that sometimes involves manipulation. So it's just sort of a neutral survival strategy to me.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think I'm a bad person for coming up with these like, this is just what I've learned over the years to survive, like, working with men, okay? And, like, any manipulation that I do against them, they deserve, because, again, like, oh, I'm supposed to just, like, be direct with them, like, lay all my cards out on the table, immediately put myself in an even more disadvantageous position.
Yeah, I mean, you won't get very far.
I think it's completely ethical. Again, because men are physically stronger, they have more institutional power. So for me, like, just one of the easiest things is to just kind of get them to self-destruct. And it's so easy to do because men are already, like, pretty self-destructive for the most part. And so, yeah, like, getting guys to, like, you know, just those, like, little, like, looks that I do to other women across the room kind of thing. You know, men sort of, like, notice that, and it gets them to doubt themselves, you know, sort of self-destruct a little bit, you know. My message to women, like, what I want women to take away from this episode is that, yes, like, male solidarity is a political structure that is really challenging for us. But on an individual level or on an interpersonal level, don't assume that a man is going to side with another man in every situation. Men have competing interests. Pay attention to those competing interests. And when you notice a conflict between two men, throw gasoline on that shit. Play both sides. Okay? Learn to observe social situations and leverage them to your benefit. It's one of the many ways that we as women can actually, like, build solidarity with each other and usurp patriarchy.
Okay, so that's our show. Check us out on our website, thefemaledatingstrategy.com. We can discuss this on our forum. Also, check out our Patreon for weekly bonus content. You can also chat with us about this episode on the Discord and send your own story for a Roast to Scroat episode, which I want to get some Roast to Scroats built up so we can do another Thanksgiving roast this year.
Yeah.
Maybe we should do a Halloween roast. Someone, like, send us your Roast to Scroats or your Narcissus or Queen Shits, like, and just let us know a story. So you can send that to us on the Patreon. Thanks for listening, Queens. And for all you mad losers out there, die mad.